Your most valuable asset is your earning ability, your ability to make a valuable contribution to the achievement of some important result. There's nothing that will give you a longer and higher and more consistent stream of income than your capacity to work. Everything that you do to increase your earning ability increases your likelihood of achieving great success and financial independence or even wealth during the course of your career. Your earning ability is the goose that lays the golden egg. If your goal is to fulfill your potential as a human being, you must develop a lifelong commitment to conserving and enhancing your earning ability by guarding your health and developing your mind. You are always self-employed, no matter who signs your paycheck. You are the president of your own personal services corporation. This means that, among other things, you are 100% responsible for your own research and development, or constantly working on yourself to increase the value of your contribution. Your ability to get valuable results will determine more than any other factor how much you earn during the course of your lifetime. Lifelong learning is now a minimum requirement for success in any field. It's the springboard to higher earnings and job security. It's the antidote to job loss in a rapidly shifting economy. Why is it then that people don't engage aggressively in ongoing personal and professional development? The major reason is a lack of goals and plans. When a person has no clear sense of direction, there's no pressing reason for him or her to learn anything new. A lack of goals leads to a lack of commitment, especially a lack of commitment to oneself and one's future. However, the biggest single weakness leading to underachievement is a lack of time perspective. Men and women fail because they don't take the long term into consideration in their day-to-day actions. They choose to live for the moment, preferring what is fun and enjoyable to what is hard and necessary. In our session on time management, we said that you can measure the importance of anything you do by assessing its potential impact on your future. Something that has major potential impact on your future is something that's important for you to do in the present. Something that has a low potential impact on your future is something that is not particularly important for you to do in the present, or ever, perhaps. Long-time perspective is the attitude of mind that more than anything guarantees that you will achieve the success that you desire. And long-time perspective requires that you do things in the short term that will have a major impact in the long term. One of the most valuable, highest priority activities that you can engage in is to learn and grow and develop your mind and invest in increasing your earning ability. When you read a book, listen to an audio cassette, or attend a seminar, you may learn something useful that can have an impact on your career that may last for 10 or 20 or even 30 years. When you learn something that changes your way of thinking or dramatically improves your way of doing things, it can have a positive future impact on yourself, your family, your children, and even your children's children. When you increase your income and move into a higher socioeconomic group, you are giving your children opportunities to move up into the same group as well. Your children's children can still be benefiting a generation from now as a result of your investment in yourself and your career in the present. The great enemies of continuous personal growth and development are primarily television, newspapers, and endless socializing. The average adult in America works approximately 8 hours and sleeps approximately 8 hours each day. That leaves 72 discretionary hours per week to invest in your future. However, most people consume their extra time by watching television. The average television in America is on 7 hours and 15 minutes per day, and the average adult American watches more than 5 hours of television each evening. Another great waste of time is reading the newspaper from cover to cover every day. Many people spend as much as 2 or 3 hours each day reading newspapers. But the fact is that a newspaper is meant to be read quickly and then thrown away. It's not meant to be studied like a textbook. In fact, you could probably give up reading newspapers altogether, and it would have very little negative impact on your life. People often ask me, if I give up reading newspapers, how will I know what's going on? Well, if what is going on is important, someone will tell you. someone else can spend hours reading the same story over and over, and they'll tell you in passing. Anyone in my seminars who has ever given up reading the newspaper has found that he never misses it, and yet he stays as well informed as anyone else. The development of long-time perspective is necessary if you want to set the right priorities on the way you use your discretionary time. Whatever you're doing, you must ask yourself, what potential positive impact can this have on my future and the future of my family or my business? If what you're doing has no potential positive impact on your future, you must discipline yourself to curtail the activity, if not to stop it altogether. I've become a strong believer in the power of personal and professional development. I believe that you can become anything that you want in life if you can clearly identify it and then set out on a course of study to learn what you need to know to be successful. When I talked about goal setting earlier, I said that one of the most important questions you must ask is, what additional knowledge or information will I need in order to achieve my goal? If your goal is to become financially independent, you know by now that in order to achieve this goal, you have to become very good at what you do. So your question must be, what do I need to learn to be the best in my field? It's only when you commit yourself to going any distance, making any sacrifice, and spending any amount of time necessary to learn what you need to learn to be the best, that you can be sure that you will achieve your financial and professional goals. Your ability to get valuable results for which someone else can pay you can be compared to water in a bucket. When you start your career, the results you can get are at a minimum. You have limited knowledge and experience. Therefore, the amount that you can earn is also limited. Your bucket of earning capacity has very little in it. As time passes, you pour more knowledge and experience into the bucket. As your level of practical knowledge increases, the level in the bucket rises, and your level of income rises as well. If you keep putting more knowledge and experience into the bucket, the level of practical results you get will eventually rise to the point where your level of income will be higher as well. However, there's a small problem with this bucket. The bucket has a hole in it. This means that some of your knowledge and experience is draining out, becoming obsolete or useless every single day. Your earning ability will actually diminish as time passes if you do nothing to continually increase it as you go along. In order to counteract this loss of valuable knowledge, you must be continually putting more knowledge into the top of the bucket than the amount that is dripping out of the bottom. The person who stops learning doesn't stay in place. The person who stops learning and growing actually begins to slide backward as his earning capacity, his most valuable asset, begins to decline or leak away. I mentioned several mental laws earlier in this course. They all apply to the concept of personal and professional development. The law of belief says that your beliefs become your realities. The very best way, and perhaps the only way, to build up an unshakable belief in your ability to achieve your goals is for you to learn everything you need to know to be able to accomplish them. Successful people in America are not necessarily smarter than unsuccessful people. They simply know more of the important things than their contemporaries and their competitors. Successful people are simply those who have made the sacrifices and paid the price to move ahead in their field by learning more about what they're doing than the average person. Sometimes, one small bit of extra knowledge at a critical moment can change the whole direction of your career and enable you to make a giant leap forward. Every change, every improvement in our lives begins with taking in new information. It's only when we gain a new insight or understanding of ourselves or our work that we are empowered to change and improve our lives. Successful men and women are those who are continually bombarding their minds with new ideas from a variety of sources. They wade into the river of knowledge and they open themselves up to a continuous stream of information. One of the great facts of American life is that to earn more, you must learn more. You cannot earn any more than you're earning today, except to the degree to which you learn and practice something new. You are plateaued at this moment. You have reached your maximum income at your current level of knowledge. Every bit of progress that you make from this moment forward will be dependent upon your learning something new or different and acting on it. Another law that I've talked about is the law of correspondence. The law of correspondence says that your outer world is a reflection of your inner world. This law also says that your outer world of wealth and accomplishments will tend to correspond to your inner world of learning and preparation. For this reason, you seldom learn anything new and valuable without very soon getting an opportunity to put it into practice, to do something with it. This brings us again to the law of attraction. The law of attraction says that everything you have attracted into your life by the person you are. You can attract more because you can change the person you are. This law of attraction is so powerful that if you commit yourself to a course of study to upgrade your personal and professional skills, you'll almost immediately begin attracting into your life people, circumstances, ideas, and even job offers to enable you to use your new knowledge in a practical and useful way. You'll set up a force field of energy around you that starts to attract what other people call luck, but which you will know is a direct result of your own work on yourself. Another law that we learned earlier that has a major impact on everything that happens to you is the law of cause and effect, with its sub-law, the law of sowing and reaping. The law of cause and effect says that for every effect in your life, real or desired, there is a specific cause. And the cause of wealth, success, and high achievement in America is hard work, commitment, and unending preparation. The law of sowing and reaping says that whatever you are reaping today is the result of what you have sown in the past, especially what you have sown in your own mind. If you wish to reap something different in the future, you can do it by making the decision to sow something new and different in the present. Once you've sown the seeds of new information, ideas, and knowledge, the reaping, the opportunity to use the new knowledge, will start to happen under its own power, by the laws of nature. Perhaps the most important of the laws that we've learned with regard to personal and professional development is the law of accumulation. This law says that every great accomplishment is an accumulation of hundreds, even thousands of hours and efforts that no one ever sees or appreciates. The beautiful little poem by Longfellow, where he describes men and women who achieved greatness in their lives, sums it up beautifully. It says, "Those heights by great men won and kept were not achieved by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night." This law of accumulation says that everything counts. Everything you're doing or not doing on a daily basis counts. Everything is being written down in a big book and is either going on the credit side or the debit side of the ledger. Everything that you're doing is either moving you toward your goals or moving you away. Every hour that you read rather than watching television, every hour that you listen to tapes rather than listen to the radio, every hour that you spend in seminars and lectures rather than on socializing and wasting time counts. Every hour is adding up to either a great life or a mediocre life. And the clock is running. Now here's some advice, which, if you follow it, will change your life forever. If you follow this advice, I promise you that you will achieve all your goals, including the financial independence or wealth that you desire. I can also tell you without equivocation that if you ignore this advice, your life will be much more difficult than it needs to be, and there's a very real possibility that you will never accomplish the success of which you're capable. Here is the advice. From this day forward, invest 3% of your annual income back into your own personal and professional development. As Benjamin Franklin said, "Pour your purse into your mind, and your mind will fill your purse with gold anew." Make a commitment to invest in continuous learning, continuous, ongoing personal and professional development to the amount of 3% of your income weekly, monthly, and annually. And this is my promise to you. If you invest 3% of your income back into yourself, in a very short time, you will find that you will never have to worry about money again. The flip side of the coin is also true. If you do not invest part of your income every single month, every single week back into yourself, you will probably have to worry about money for the rest of your life. Within 3 to 5 years, if you invest 3% of your income back into yourself, back into increasing your earning ability, you'll reach the point where you do not have enough days and weeks in the year to spend all the money that 3% of your income represents. If you begin right now to invest this amount back into your mind, you will be astonished within a few months or a year at how rapidly your whole life begins to transform. Now, a good question is, how do I spend this money? There are three primary areas of personal and professional development. The first is to read, and to read everything that you can get your hands on that will help you. I've spoken to many people in my seminars and have found an unfortunate flaw with this recommendation concerning the necessity of reading. It is that many people have come out of school unable to read. They find reading difficult and avoid it whenever possible. Because of the predominance of television and radio, many people are accustomed to taking in all of their information passively rather than through the active medium of the written word. If you're a poor reader, there are countless ways that you can learn to read. Many companies have remedial reading programs, as do YMCAs, community colleges, high schools, and universities. There's a large and growing national literary program which actively searches for students to match with trained tutors. If you want to learn to read fluently and well, there's nothing in the world to stop you. Remember, all leaders are readers, and only reading is reading. There's no substitute for it. Reading is to the mind as exercise is to the body. There's nothing that more fully engages your entire brain in the act of learning and personal and professional development than sitting down and concentrating on the written word. Many people make excuses, justifications, and rationalizations for not reading. But these are only exercises in self-delusion that are leading them down the slippery slope to failure. If you have a reading problem, set a goal this very minute to become excellent at reading. A year or two from today, your reading problems will be a thing of the past, and you will be rewarded in more ways than you can imagine. How much should you read? Well, if you read 1 hour per day in your field and take good notes, within 3 years, you'll be an authority. Within 5 years, you'll be a national expert. Within 7 years, you'll be an international expert in any field that you choose. If you read 1 hour per day, that will translate into roughly one book per week. One book per week will translate into approximately 50 books per year. 50 books per year will translate into approximately 500 books over the next 10 years. Now, considering that the average American reads less than one nonfiction book per year, if you read 500 books that in some way develop your mind and your abilities over the next 10 years, you will be so far ahead that you will not believe it. At the very least, you'll have to buy a newer or bigger house just to hold your books. Fully 58% of Americans never read another nonfiction book after they leave high school. Yet, if you were to read just one book per month that somehow helped you to grow personally or professionally, it would put you into the top 1% of adult learners in America. The Gallup organization found that the average number of books read by 1,500 of the most successful men and women in America today was only 19 books per year, 12 of which were nonfiction and 7 of which were fiction. If you begin to invest 1 hour per day reading in your field, you will be putting your foot onto the accelerator of your own potential. In a very short period of time, because of the law of correspondence, your outer life will begin to change at a dramatic rate. The second place where you can invest the 3% of your income you're putting back into your mind is in audiocassette and videocassette learning, like this. The finest minds alive today have summarized their very best thoughts on professionally produced audiocassettes. In fact, the invention of audio tape learning is probably the greatest breakthrough in education since the invention of the printing press. I've met and spoken to thousands of men and women whose lives have been profoundly changed by audio tape listening. The sad fact is that the vast majority of people have never listened to an educational audio cassette in their lives. For some reason, they think that it's not for them, that audio cassettes are too expensive, or that it wouldn't help them in their fields, considering their situations. According to the American Automobile Association, the average car owner in America drives between 12,000 and 25,000 miles per year. Taking traffic into consideration, this translates into something between 500 and 1,000 hours that you spend sitting in your car every single year. In turn, this is the equivalent of 12.5 to 25 40-hour weeks per annum. Imagine what it would mean if your boss gave you 12.5 to 25 paid weeks, 3 to 6 months off every single year for ongoing education. Do you think that would affect your income? You bet it would. 12.5 to 25 weeks translates into 1 to 2 university semesters. In other words, you can become one of the best educated and best paid men or women of your generation simply by listening to audio cassettes instead of the radio as you drive around. So turn your car into a university on wheels and turn driving time into learning time. The third place to invest your 3% is in seminars, workshops, and ongoing courses of study. And here's the key. Only take courses from experts, from men and women who have achieved success in their fields and who are now teaching others how to do the same thing. When you go to seminars or workshops given by experts, sit as close to the front as you can and take copious notes. Take every opportunity to follow up the sessions by asking questions and getting insights and advice. Sometimes you can ask a question and get a piece of knowledge or information from an expert at a seminar that will be worth thousands of dollars to you and may save you months of hard work. Take every advantage and opportunity at these seminars to get to meet and know the other people who are there. Hand out your business cards and get their business cards. Use this opportunity to build up your network. The type of people who go to seminars and workshops are invariably the best kind of people in our society. They are people who are ambitious, hardworking, eager to learn, and willing to invest in themselves. These are the kind of people that you want to get to know. Where do you begin your lifelong quest for knowledge? My advice is that you start right where you are. You look around you at your current job and ask yourself, what knowledge or skills would it be useful for me to have if I wanted to move ahead in my current job? Begin with the most relevant, valuable, useful, and most practical knowledge that you can learn and apply right now. Don't worry about learning things that you may need a year or 5 years from now. This just leads to distraction and dispersion of your efforts, and it's a waste of time. Be very focused and selfish about what you choose to learn in the short term. Learn only what you can use immediately to get better results. Earl Nightingale once said that you will always be paid in direct proportion to what you do, how well you do it, and the difficulty of replacing you. In terms of your ongoing professional development, you must always be thinking in terms of what it is you are doing and what it is you want to do in the future. What will you have to learn in order to be prepared to do what you want to do 2, 3, or 5 years from now? Once you've chosen your field, then you must concentrate on becoming very, very good at it. And finally, you must make every effort to make yourself indispensable. If you can choose your right field, do it very well, and make yourself indispensable, especially by the acquisition of superior knowledge and skills, then your future is largely assured. You'll never have to worry about a job, and you'll never have to worry about money for very long. We live in a knowledge-based society. Fully 70% of all men and women working in America today work in some phase of generating, processing, and distributing information. And the percentage of knowledge-based workers is increasing every year. You have no choice but to incorporate yourself into the knowledge and information-based economy by becoming extremely knowledgeable about your chosen field. Read Success Magazine, Inc., Forbes, Fortune, and Business Week. Read any other specialized publications that deal with your profession or occupation. Go out and purchase the books written by successful people in your field. Build up your own library. When you read these books, make notes and underline so that you can come back to the important parts and find them easily when you read the book again. There are some important things that you can do to enhance your ability to learn. Studies conducted on superlearning have concluded that listening to classical music in the background while you read and study accelerates the speed at which you learn and the amount of information that you retain. Another good idea is to have a quiet place where you go to study on a regular basis. By doing this, you train your mind to be ready to absorb information when you sit down and begin. To get the most out of a book, one of the best ways to read it is the four-step OPIR method, O-P-I-R. The first letter, O, means before you begin a book, you do an overview. You read the front of the book and the back. You read the table of contents and you flip through the book to see how it's laid out. The second is P for preview. In the preview, you read through the book one page at a time, just turning the pages as rapidly as you can and getting a feel for the chapter headings and the subheads that give the major ideas that you will be learning. The third letter is I, which stands for in view. The in view is how you read in depth through the book. A good recommendation is to read the book in order of your own personal interests. You don't necessarily follow the order that the author has laid out, except in a fiction book, but instead you go straight to the chapters that interest you the most, and then from there to the chapters that interest you the second most, and so on. You may find that there's only one chapter in a book that's of interest to you at this moment. In that case, you should read only that chapter and then put the book away for another time. The fourth letter is R, which stands for review. Since you forget fully 50% of what you learn within 2 hours, if you quickly review a book immediately after having read everything in it that you consider valuable, you will double or triple your retention level. What I found useful is to underline with a red pen or use a highlighter on the critical sentences and ideas throughout the book. It may take me 5 or 6 hours to read a book the first time, but then I can reread all the key ideas in less than an hour. Some books are only meant to be scanned quickly. Some books should be read completely from one end to the other, but not read again. Other books are full of valuable information that's extremely relevant to what you're doing, and these books can be reread again and again with your reaching new depths of understanding at each reading. Just as you make eating, sleeping, exercising, and socializing a regular part of your daily life, you should also make reading, learning, and studying a regular part of your activities. You should have a specific place in your home or apartment where you study, and you should set a regular study schedule. You can tell with considerable accuracy where you're going to be and what you're going to be doing in 3 to 5 years by the amount of time you spend in investing in your mind on a daily and weekly basis. My friend Charlie Jones says, "You will be in 5 years where you are today, except for the books you read and the people you meet." Your commitment to ongoing personal and professional development is perhaps the most important single thing that you can do in your career. This commitment to yourself, to your earning ability, will open up more doors and make you capable of taking advantage of more opportunities than anything else that you can do, and it's totally under your own control. A commitment to ongoing personal development is an outward expression of self-discipline, self-mastery, and long-time perspective. It's a mark of personal character that is engaged in by all superior men and women in our society. I want to finish this session with what I call my 1000% formula. This formula is based on the proposition that it is possible for you to increase your income by 1000% or 10 times over the next 10 years. It's based on the law of accumulation, and it's very simple. I've personally used this method to increase my own income by 100 times over a period of 12 years. Many of my students have used this method to increase their income by even more than I have. The first question I have to ask you is simply this. Is it possible for you, if you really wanted to, if you really concentrated, to increase your productivity, your performance, and your output by 0.5% over the next 7 days? If you think about this question, you will realize that just by applying a little bit of what you already know about time management, you could easily be 0.5% more effective over the next 7 days. Now, having done it for 7 days, could you do it for the next 7 days? And the answer is, of course you could. If you could do it for 1 7-day period, you could do it for another 7-day period. Could you do it every week for a month? Your answer again would have to be yes. By the end of the 3rd week, you would have triggered the momentum principle of personal development. You would find yourself moving and growing at a more rapid rate each week, as long as you persisted in growing and improving your effectiveness a little bit every single day. Having done it for the first month, could you do it for the second month? And the third month? Could you do it for an entire year? And again, your answer will be yes. If you really wanted to, you could maintain this momentum indefinitely. In fact, the longer you engage in a continuous program of increasing your personal effectiveness, the easier it will become. Having done it for the first year, could you do it for the second year and the third year and the fourth year? And the answer is, of course you could. Well, here's how the numbers work out. 0.5% improvement in your effectiveness each week would equal a 2% increase in your productivity over the course of a 4-week month. A 2% increase in your productivity each month over the course of 13 4-week periods, 52 weeks, would be a total of 26% in 1 year. And everything you do to increase your effectiveness in any area has an impact on every other area of your effectiveness, so it would surely compound or grow over the 52 weeks. 26% each year times 10 years with compounding would equal 1,004% at the end of the 10th year. In short, you could increase your total productivity, performance, and output by 1,004% over 10 years by simply using the law of accumulation and improving at the rate of 0.5% per week. If you have the self-discipline to maintain this rate of improvement of 0.5% per week, I can assure you that you will get these results, and perhaps even greater results. Almost everyone who has tried this methodology I'm about to give you has told me that 26% per year is too low. They have experienced 50% and 100% and even 300 and 400% increases in productivity, performance, and income in as little as 6 months. Here are the 7 parts of the 1,000% formula. First, arise early and read for 30 to 60 minutes each morning in something educational, motivational, or inspirational. If you invest 30 to 60 minutes in your mind each morning, your entire day will be better. You'll feel happier and more positive. You'll be more productive. If all you did was to read 30 to 60 minutes each morning and nothing else, that alone would probably give you your 1,000% increase over the next 10 years, if not before. Second, write and rewrite your major goals in the present tense every single morning. Use a spiral notebook and spend 3 to 5 minutes writing out your goals. This programs them deeper and deeper into your subconscious mind and makes you more alert and aware all day of opportunities to achieve them. Third, plan every day in advance. Write out a blueprint for every day before you begin and follow the blueprint every hour of the day. Fourth, set priorities and always concentrate on the most valuable use of your time. If all you did was to set careful priorities based on your most important goals and objectives, and then disciplined yourself to concentrate only on the most valuable use of your time, that alone would probably give you your 1,000% increase. Fifth, listen to educational audio cassettes in your car. Never allow your automobile to be moving without an educational audio cassette playing. Remember, everything counts. Every minute that you spend learning is moving you that much closer toward the fulfillment of your goal of financial independence. Sixth, ask 2 questions after every situation, every interview, every sales call, and every difficulty. The questions are simply these: what did I do right? And what would I do differently? Asking these questions, what did I do right? And what would I do differently? After every experience will enable you to learn at an accelerated rate from everything that you do. And the 7th step in the 1,000% formula is simply to treat everyone you meet like a million-dollar customer. Treat everyone you meet, starting with your family at home in the morning, and then people throughout the day, as though he or she were the most important person in the world. Each person already considers himself or herself to be the most important person in the world. And if you recognize this, It will do more to smooth the path for you in your human relationships than any other single attitude that you could ever adopt. The key to your future is ongoing, continuous, persistent, personal, and professional development. There is nothing that you cannot be. There is nothing that you cannot achieve. There is nowhere that you cannot go and nothing that you cannot become if you are willing to pay the price in terms of investing your time and money back into your mind and keeping at it long enough and hard enough until you achieve the goals that you desire. One of the great secrets of success in America is to do what you love to do. You'll be more successful doing what you enjoy, doing something that you care about, than at any other career or job that you could possibly select. In fact, one of the best ways to waste your life and to eliminate all possibility of your being really happy in your career is to work at something that you don't like just for the money or the security. Fully 80% of men and women working today are underemployed in their jobs. That is, their jobs don't fully utilize all of their talents and abilities. Perhaps less than 5% of employed people in America feel that they are working at their full potential. Your primary responsibility in your career is to adamantly refuse to work at anything that you don't enjoy. In order to do this, you must take full 100% responsibility for getting and keeping the job you want. The average person begins a career by taking whatever job is offered when he leaves school. This often begins a lifelong habit of allowing other people to control his career path. The individual stays at the job until he or she is either promoted, demoted, fired, or something else. Then the person goes looking for someone else to give him or her a place to work. He or she remains totally at the mercy of whoever decides to offer him or her a job and a paycheck. In this session, you're going to learn how to join the creative minority who move into and move up in the jobs they want. One of the fastest ways for you to get an increase in pay is for you to move to a job that pays more. And the best combination of all in working is for you to do something you enjoy that offers higher pay and greater opportunities for advancement in the future. Fortunately, there are thousands of jobs available for you. You are surrounded by a vast job market like an ocean that is largely invisible, but it exists nonetheless. If you can decide exactly what it is you want, you can use a variety of goal setting and goal achieving techniques to get it. This especially applies to creative job search. If you can decide exactly what kind of a job you want, in this session, you'll learn how to get it in the shortest time possible. Creative job search begins with you. You need to sit down with a pad and pen and describe your ideal job. When you think about your ideal job, you should think about several things. First, what is it that you would most enjoy doing? Second, what is it that you've been good at in the past? Third, what are you best qualified to do? And fourth, what have you done in your career that has been most successful for you and your company? You begin your job search by a rigorous self-assessment. You look into yourself and decide who you are, what you can do, and most of all, what you would ideally like to do in the future. You may take psychological tests to get a better handle on your personality and interests. You may ask other people, including people close to you, what they think would be the best thing for you to be doing. Often, people who are close to you can see possibilities for you that you are not aware of yourself. Again, ask, what are your unique talents and strengths? What do you do very well? Where are you excellent? What sort of work really interests you? If you won $1 million in the lottery and you could work at anything you wanted to for the rest of your life, what job would you choose to do? When you describe your ideal job, write out the kind of work that you would like to do day in and day out. What kind of income would you ideally like to earn? What kind of people would you like to work with? What kind of values would you want the company you work for to have? Where would you like your work to be located? Since your skills are portable, you can work anywhere you want in the country. you can move from the northeast to the southwest, from the northwest to the southeast. You can work in any kind of climate in any part of the nation where you enjoy the environment and the lifestyle. There are no limitations except the ones you place on your own mind and imagination. What size of company would you like to work for? Would you like to work for a large company or a small company? What kind of corporate culture would you be most comfortable with? Would you prefer to work for a formal company with a hierarchical structure? Or would you prefer to work for a more non-traditional or relaxed company with a flattened management structure? And of course, what kind of industry would you like to work in? If you're currently working for someone else, or if you're unemployed and in the course of seeking a job, this process that I'm describing will help you get a better job faster than any other method you could follow. I've taught this material to thousands of men and women, and my students have a 90% success rate at getting the job they want within 6 weeks. But the entire process begins with you. Creative job search begins with you taking full responsibility for the rest of your career and not leaving it up to any employer to decide what you'll do and where you'll do it. Creative job search requires that you look into yourself and do regular self-examinations so that you know exactly what it is you want to do, where you want to do it, and who you want to do it with. Now, where do you find the job you want? Well, the fact is that there are millions of job markets. Every company and every department in every company and every decision maker who has hiring authority is a job market. To get the job you want, you only have to find and impress one person with the idea that you can give him or her greater value for which he or she is willing to pay, and you can create a job for yourself. Over 85% of all available jobs are never advertised and never published in any form. If you read every newspaper and apply to every ad and send out resumes to every conceivable name and address that you can get, you'll only be making yourself known to about 15% of the entire job market. The worst thing about traditional job search, answering ads in the paper and sending out resumes, is that it is terribly competitive and extremely frustrating. In one study, they concluded that it took an average of 1,470 resumes mailed out to generate one job offer. Those are odds you cannot afford to play around with. Life is just too short. The 85% of jobs in the invisible job market are invariably filled as the result of contacts. That is, either someone you know has a friend or associate who needs someone with your talent and ability, or you make the contacts yourself, either directly or indirectly. Direct ways of making contacts will be described later in this session. Indirect methods of making contacts are the various forms of networking we'll talk about in the next session. Many jobs in America are created when the right person comes along. Most companies realize that their growth is only limited by the number of talented people that they can attract and keep. Successful, progressive companies are always on the lookout for talented individuals who can help them expand the quality and quantity of the products and services that they sell. Many companies are hiring at the same time that they're laying people off. It's generally accepted in America today that if a good person walks in the door, you grab that person and hold on to him or her, and you figure out what you're going to do with the person later. Your job is to be perceived by the employer that you choose as the kind of person that he or she should hire on the spot, pay good money to, and give ample opportunity for advancement. The more specific you are about the type of job you want to do, the easier you are to hire and the less competition you'll face. The more research that you do before you sit down with an employer, the more likely it is that you'll be able to present yourself as the ideal person for a specific position or opportunity within that organization. When you have a clear idea of your ideal job, but you've never done it before, you begin to do research on the business, the industry, and even on the city or state where you've decided you want to work. Begin with the most general. Go down to the local library and look through the encyclopedias. Gather all the information in note form that you can about the kind of work, the kind of industry, and the part of the country you want to work in. Once you have a general understanding of the field, you can then start reading trade magazines, articles, and stories on the business, industry, or occupation. You can go down to the library and read or check out books such as the 100 Best Companies to Work For in America. If you're interested in going into a particular field, seek out people in the field and ask them about it. Most people who are working in a particular profession or occupation love to talk about what they're doing. Through your own efforts or through contacts, get a hold of someone and take him or her out to lunch and ask every question you can think of about the particular business or industry that you're interested in. Use your contacts. Tell members of your family that you're interested in getting more information about this company or industry. Tell your friends when you talk to them that you're thinking of making a career change into a particular business or industry, and ask them if they know anybody or have any information on it. In casual conversation with acquaintances and other people that you know, be sure to mention that you're in the process of a job search or job change. You'll be absolutely amazed at how many of the people you talk to have information that you can use to speed up the process of getting the job you want. A basic rule is to read in your chosen field until you have questions, and then talk to people and ask questions until you need to read again. And above all, be sure to ask for referrals and recommendations from everyone. Remember, there's a direct relationship between the number of people you know and who know you, and how successful you will be in getting your ideal job. This brings us to the crux or the core skill of creative job search, and it's called informational interviewing. Informational interviewing is the process by which you select and sort out the companies that you have decided you might like to work for. The informational interviewing process is the process that is used by the top 5% of job seekers in America. It will get you more and better information, more and better job offers, and more and better opportunities to move up rapidly than any other single approach to career development. It's so powerful and so effective that everyone who uses it is astonished by how quickly they get results with it. Informational interviewing is based on the premise that your life is valuable. You're not about to go out and just go to work for anyone who offers you a job. You are going to carefully select the place where you want to work. In order to determine whether or not a company offers you the kind of human environment and culture that you're looking for, you need to ask a lot of questions and you need to keep your options open. All of these requirements are fulfilled by informational interviewing. Let's say that you have decided to get a job in a particular industry. You will have gone to the library and read everything you could find on that industry. You will have spoken to friends and you will have read all the publications you could find which have articles or information on that industry. As your search process continues, you'll start to become aware of the leading companies in that industry in the city where you've decided you want to live. Your next step is to begin contacting these companies and asking for 10 or 20 minutes of the time of an executive who you feel is in a position to make a decision on the kind of job you're looking for. When you get to the interview, you explain that you are doing some research in this field because you're thinking of making a career change in this area, and you would like to ask him or her a few questions to help you in your decision-making process. Here's an example of how this process works. Some years ago, I decided that I wanted to be a copywriter. At the time, I wasn't even sure what a copywriter was, but I had an idea that it was a job writing and creating advertising for various products. The first thing that I did was to visit an advertising agency and speak to the person who was called the copy chief. I explained to him that I was interested in the field. He asked me a few questions and told me that my qualifications were not such that anyone would hire me at the present time. I asked him for his advice, and he suggested that I learn more about what was involved in copywriting and how to do it. At the time, I was working for a large department store chain. However, I was dissatisfied and frustrated because I wasn't earning very much money and I didn't really enjoy the work at all. So I went down to the public library and began checking out books on copywriting. I read books on the development of the profession of copywriting as well as books on how to write copy effectively. Over the course of the next year, I wrote sample copy for advertisements and took it to various advertising agencies in the city. I started with the smaller agencies, taking my material to them, showing them what I had done, and asking for their advice on how to go further. Over the course of the next 6 months, I applied for jobs at almost every advertising agency in the city. After every interview, I would ask the person who had turned me down what I would have to do to improve. Eventually, I received enough advice and input, and I had learned enough that at the end of 6 months, I applied for and was accepted by the largest advertising agency in the city as a junior copywriter. When I look back at the process, I realize that I stumbled into this creative job search methodology without even knowing it. And you too can make this methodology work just as I and many thousands of others are making it work all the time. Here are some questions that you might choose to ask during an informational interview if you haven't already gathered the answers. How long has the company been in business? How long has it been in business in this city or in this state? What is the major product or service sold by this company? What type of people or organization uses your products or services the most? What influence is the current economy having on your business? How do you see the business developing over the next year? How about the next 3 to 5 years? What sort of skills are in greatest demand in this business? Where do you see the opportunities opening up for people in this business in the near future? What are some of the challenges or difficulties facing this business in today's market? And finally, you can ask, if you could resolve one problem or difficulty facing you in this business, what would it be? You could then go on to ask some personal questions of the person you're interviewing. For example, you could ask, how long have you been in this business? Or how long have you been in this position? You could ask, what did you do before this? Why did you change? How did you get into this business anyway? How do you like this field? Would you recommend it to others? What advice could you give to a person who is interested in a career in this field? And finally, can you suggest anything that I could read that would help me to get a better handle or understanding on this business? Asking each of these questions gives you an opportunity to listen to the answer. Be sure to write down your answers on a pad of paper in full view of the person you are talking to. Sometimes people who are searching for jobs will interview prospective employers as though they were planning to write an article on the subject of the interview. Keep very good notes so that the employer will see that you are serious. Employers are very impressed with people who ask intelligent questions and listen carefully to the answers. Listening builds trust. This informational interview gives you an opportunity to get a feel for the employer and gives the employer an opportunity to get a feel for you, with neither one of you being in the position of having to make any kind of employment decision. Keep your informational interview to 20 minutes or less. When the 20 minutes are up, thank the employer or decision maker very much for his or her time and begin excusing yourself as you prepare to depart. Be polite, be friendly, and be grateful for the time. Immediately after the interview, go back out to the car or to your office or home and send a thank you note. Here's another example of this process. Some years ago, I decided to change my career and go into the leasing and sale of commercial real estate. I followed exactly the process that we talked about here. I went down to the library and did my research. I spoke to various people in the industry. I finally settled on the names of 5 companies, the 5 best and most respected commercial real estate companies in the city. Then, I began my informational interviewing process. I visited each one of these companies, starting with the smallest firm and working up to the largest. I interviewed with the key decision maker from the viewpoint of getting advice and information on whether or not I should go into the field of commercial real estate. I had done enough research so that I could ask some very intelligent questions. As a result of this process, within 3 weeks I was offered positions with 4 of the 5 top companies. However, my research and my interviewing had led me to conclude that I wanted to work for company number 5, the very most successful company in the city. For this reason, I asked the companies who had offered me jobs for time to think about it. Meanwhile, I went back to the 5th company and followed the procedure, which I'll explain now. Once you found a person who you would like to work for in a company where you would like to work, you call the individual back and tell him or her that you would like to get together for a few minutes to explain your findings, to explain the results of your research in this field. Almost invariably, if you've been a pleasant interviewer and have impressed him or her favorably, you'll be invited back for a follow-up meeting very soon. When you sit down with a decision maker, you explain your findings. You explain the research process that you've gone through, which has led you to conclude that you want to work for this person in this company doing this particular job. You explain that after meeting and talking to people in all of the other companies, you feel that this is the finest company in the industry and you want to work here. If you've already received another job offer, be sure to mention it. This will increase your perceived value as an employee. You then explain to the decision maker that based on your interview with him and based on your research, you feel that you can make the following specific contributions to his or her company. You say something like this: I believe that I have some ideas by which this business or department can be greatly improved. This was the wonderful approach suggested by Earl Nightingale many years ago. In other words, you make it clear that you're not looking for a job and a paycheck. You're looking for an opportunity to perform and to get results. And the wonderful thing is that as a result of your job search process, you have a pretty good idea of where you can make a valuable contribution to this organization. So you can list the problems that you could solve for this employer and the benefits that the employer would enjoy from hiring you. Explain how your previous experience, your knowledge, and your ability ideally qualify you to be able to do this job the way you've described. Explain to him or her what hiring you would mean in terms of explicit advantages and benefits for the organization. In short, you sell yourself based on your information and knowledge about the person and the company and the industry. There is a rule called the Universal Hiring Principle. This principle says that you can create a job anywhere where you can convince the employer that he or she can make or save more money than the cost of hiring you. Companies always hire additional people as long as those additional people increase revenues or reduce costs in an amount greater than the combined salaries and benefits paid to those people. It's your job to demonstrate to the employer that this universal hiring principle applies to you. Remember, every job is an opportunity to solve problems or exploit opportunities. Wherever there are employers with problems unsolved or opportunities unexploited, there are job openings. Even in the midst of the worst depression in American history, fully 75% of the working population had jobs. By using this process of informational interviewing, you can assure that you are fully employed for the rest of your life. In addition to informational interviewing, there are two other subjects of importance in creative job search and getting the job you want throughout your career. These are, first of all, resumes, how to prepare them and how to use them, and second of all, the job interview, and how to conduct yourself in the interview to your greatest advantage. Everything that we know about resumes suggests that no one is ever hired on the basis of a resume. A resume is very much like a business card. It's something to be left rather than to be sent, unless you have no other way to get it to the decision maker except by mailing it. If you're going to send a resume, you should type an individual letter to a specific person with a one-page synopsis of your career attached. Do not send mass-produced or photocopied resumes. Especially, don't send letters to companies which are not addressed to a specific decision-maker whose name you've gotten by telephoning the organization or through some other channel. There are two types of resumes: the chronological resume and the functional resume. The chronological resume lists your job accomplishments and credentials from the most recent job back to the beginning of your career. The functional resume, on the other hand, organizes your work history in terms of the various types of work that you have done. In both cases, the most important information to put in a resume is an accurate description of your accomplishments and achievements in other positions. When a decision maker looks at a resume, he or she is looking for only one thing, and it is called transferability of results. The decision maker is asking the question, what's in it for me? And the answer in a resume consists of specific accomplishments that may be repeatable or transferable to the company that you're applying to. This is the only thing that causes a person to invite the sender of a resume for an interview, so be aware of that when you write your resume. Also, don't have anyone else write a resume for you. A professionally prepared resume is obvious to the decision maker and suggests that the individual does not have the intelligence or ability to write out a description of his or her accomplishments without professional help. Remember, it takes many, many resumes to generate an interview, and many interviews to generate a job offer. Resumes are only a small part of creative job search. As I've said, very few people are ever hired on the basis of a resume. Most job decisions are made on the basis of the person, and often the resume is not looked at all, or only looked at afterwards. When I set up a nationwide automotive importation and distribution company, I hired 15 people over the course of 90 days. I advertised in the newspaper, and I put out the word through my contacts. 14 of the 15 people were hired through the invisible job market, through word of mouth and contacts. Only one person was hired as the result of newspaper advertising, and that person quit before he even began, and he was replaced by a person who had come through another contact. Not one of the people hired for this national organization was hired on the basis of a resume. The second subject area is the job interview. The most important thing about the job interview is that you appear attractive and desirable to the interviewer. This means that you must be dressed for success, well-groomed, and with clothes that are appropriate for the job for which you're applying. A good rule is to dress as if you were going to the bank to apply for a loan, and you have a weak financial statement. Be at your very best in all respects. Always arrive 10 minutes early for the interview. Many decision makers will never hire a person who arrives late for a job interview, and I agree with that philosophy. It's indicative of a fundamental flaw in the person's character when they come late to an interview where they should be making the very best first impression. People will judge you in the first 4 seconds, and most professional interviewers agree that they have usually made a decision on the person within 2 minutes of the beginning of the interview. Your job is to be well-rested, positive, cheerful, and enthusiastic about the position. Your credentials are certainly important in the hiring decision, but when Burke Marketing Research, Inc. did a survey of personnel executives, they found that the most influential keys to hiring decisions were the following 10 factors. First, personality, or how you present yourself in the interview. Second, experience or qualifications for the job, transferability of results. Third, your background and your references, what other people will write and say about you. Fourth, your enthusiasm toward the potential employer and the possibility of getting this job. Fifth, and only fifth, is your educational and technical background. Sixth is your growth potential, your ability to evolve and grow into becoming a more valuable employee. The seventh consideration was your compatibility with the other types of people who work in the company. Eight, your intelligence and your capacity to learn, often indicated by the way that you spend your personal time, your personal development activities. The ninth consideration was how the interviewer feels about you, how much he or she likes or trusts you. And tenth, how hard a worker you appear to be. Now, higher paid employees are selected differently. A second Burke survey indicated that a majority of top management executives agree on the following 7 influencing factors as being the most important in making a decision for a higher paid person. First, personality and intelligence. Senior decision makers feel that the right person with the right personality can compensate for a lack of specific job experience. The second thing they look for is aggressiveness and assertiveness in the job interview. Years of research have indicated that eagerness for the job is a good indication of how well the person will do on the job. By really wanting the job, you show how much you want to work in this company. It's also a good idea to appear slightly nonchalant and make it clear that if you don't get the job, it won't kill you. The third thing that executives look for is an interviewee who looks you straight in the eye, as opposed to one who looks away. The fourth thing they mentioned was that being fired from a previous job will not necessarily prevent you from being hired if that's the only thing you have going against you. The fifth factor was that being divorced is not a handicap in most hiring decisions. The sixth factor for senior executive positions was that Basic enthusiasm is one of the most important qualifications for most jobs. In my company, for example, we look, first of all, for a positive mental attitude and a cheerful personality before we ask a single question about the person's background and experience. I'm sure that most employers are very strongly influenced by whether or not the job seeker has a positive mental attitude. Number 7, the executives agreed that virtually all unsolicited letters written to top executives do get read, and most of them draw some response. That means that if you write a personal letter directly to the decision maker whom you've identified as being a possible employer, in as many as 80% of cases, the employer will read the letter and take some action on it. Between 2 and 10% of letters received in this way are acted upon favorably and can lead to an interview. The creative job search is an ongoing process. Your duty to yourself is to set a goal to get the kind of job that you can throw your whole heart and soul into. You must insist on chopping and changing until you find a job you love, a job that you can lose yourself in. There are thousands of jobs available for the creative job seeker, but you must accept full responsibility for doing everything possible to assure that you are working in the very best job for you, at a place and in a company that utilizes your full range of talents and abilities, and which gives you ample opportunity to move upward and onward. If you don't look forward to going to work, if you don't love what you're doing, if you don't really enjoy the people you work with or the customers that you sell to, this could be a strong indication that you are in the wrong job and that you're in danger of wasting your working life. It's absolutely essential that you have the integrity and the courage to insist on working only at something that you enjoy. Sit down, write out a description of your ideal job, and begin using the techniques of goal setting and strategic thinking to channel yourself into the kind of position that will fill you with joy and happiness most of the time you're working. Insisting upon working at something that you enjoy is an essential step to your achieving financial independence and becoming wealthy in the course of your career. If you don't work at something that you love, you'll never really be happy and you'll never really be truly successful. But if you have the stamina and the fortitude to go out into the job market and to keep on keeping on until you get the kind of job that's right for you, that, as much as any other factor, will assure that you earn the greatest amount of money possible for you over the course of your career. Now here's an action exercise for you. Sit back and imagine that you could have any job you want. What would it be? If you could live and work anywhere you want, where would that be? If you could work with any kind of people, who would they be? Who do you know who has a job that you're a little bit envious of? What is he or she doing, and where is he or she working? Finally, what specific action step could you take this very minute to start working yourself into your ideal, your dream job? Now it's up to you. Get started. Do something today.